This week, I spent some time in the presence of a great man, a truly great man. If he walked into this room, you wouldn't know that. He's short, he's balding, he's a little heavy. He's got a heavy accent. I doubt he'd ever win an election in any country. But he is a great man. His name is Father Patrick Dubois. And he decided decades ago that he was going to devote his life, which he has done, to doing something that no one else in the world was doing. He knew, as did everyone, that millions and millions of Jews were transported to concentration camps and they were killed there. But he also knew that many Jews were killed before they ever got to concentration camps, and that no one knew their names, and no one knew where they were buried, and that all through Eastern Europe there were mass graves of Jews, and there were no markers, and no one knew where they lay. And he was going to travel, as he has done for decades, and build a team to travel with him through the towns of Eastern Europe, and map out the graves of Jews, and interview the villagers, and try to recover the names, and let families know, we have discovered what happened to your relatives. They were shot on such and such a day, in such a place, and this is where they're buried. His book is called The Holocaust by Bullets, because one of the things that they discovered was it was one bullet per Jew. Because, after all, the Germans didn't want to waste ammunition. I put in the Pew Bulletin, in Sources for Study, a few quotations from his book, and I'm going to do something that I almost never do in a sermon, which is I'm going to read to you a few of these quotations so that you can hear what he discovered. I thought that nobody could see inside the extermination camps, that they were like secret bases. Now I realize they were a part of everyday life. Passengers were simply advised to close their windows before passing the camp to block out the smell. Throughout my research for this project, I was often told the camps, the ghettos, and stones of Jewish cemeteries had disappeared and nothing remained. Eventually, I no longer paid attention to these claims, and I looked with dogged determinations for the ghettos, the synagogues, the stones of Jewish cemeteries by myself, and I always found them. When he was searching for mass graves, the journalist asked the woman who was with him, "Why are you using a metal detector?" And she answered, "Where there are cartridges, there are bodies." That's how you find mass graves. First, you start locating the cartridges. When a genocide is taking place, many people can sleep easily at night if they're sure they're not the ones who will be killed. A pit, that is a mass grave, took 3 days to quiet down because many of the victims were buried alive. After understanding that, I understood the true meaning of the words, "the pit took 3 days to die," or "the well shouted for 3 days." So I discovered that the Jews had not all been killed in forests. The Nazis feared the forest because often they concealed groups of resistance fighters or Soviet partisans. Thus, the Germans assassinated the Jews in the middle of the town, in full view and with the knowledge of everyone. I'll tell you more about that in a minute. I kept making more and more surprising and horrid discoveries. We found out that the Germans had had carte blanche regarding how to kill the Jews. A legal framework was in place that required them to assassinate the Jews, but the methods they used were left to their own initiative, even their sadism. In other words, they could do it as cruelly as they wanted, as long as the Jews were killed. The man who wrote these, the man that Cantergol and I had the honor of taking to dinner the night that he appeared here on Wednesday night to speak to the congregation. And I asked him, when I met him a few months before, "What's your goal?" And he said, "What I really want is to build a coalition of people who don't sleep well at night." Because this wasn't the only genocide. And part of my work is to go around the world and educate people about Auschwitz, because Auschwitz is the mother of genocides. And he was just in Azerbaijan, where he gave seminars to 8 different Muslim groups who wanted to know, how do we prevent genocide in our own communities? He's a French Catholic priest. He has no Jewish ancestry. But he doesn't sleep well at night. And he wanted to know what happened to the Jews of Europe. And so he told us, he goes from town to town and he interviews the people who remember as children being taken to the town square with their lunches to watch the killing of the Jews. And today, as he does this work, he finds opposition all through Europe because people say, you're just doing it for Israel. So he gets opposition on the left, and he gets opposition on the right. And by the way, although this won't surprise you, I'm sure it will discourage you, he gets opposition from some Jews who don't want this priest stirring up trouble. And he has recovered the names of hundreds of thousands of Jews who would be lost to history, who would be forgotten, who no one would know were it not for Father Patrick Dubois. That's why I said I was in the presence of a great man. And he was leaving here, where he was raising money to go back. He works all year long, summer, spring, fall, and winter. And you know what the winter is like in Eastern Europe, because he thinks that all those Jews deserve to be remembered. If you saw the Jewish Journal last week, you know that I wrote the cover story on the movie Shoah, which is a 9-hour documentary that shows no footage of the camps. It just interviews people. People who saw it, people who were there, victims, killers, bystanders. He interviews people who fought, the one or two who remain from the Warsaw Ghetto. And towards the end of the movie, one of them, Antek, who was the deputy commander of the Warsaw Ghetto and went back to the ghetto to find that no one was left, that he was too late, that the ghetto had been wiped out. He went first to ask the Polish partisans if they would join the resistance. They told him no. So he went back under the sewers and opened a manhole cover and walked in the ghetto, and it was a ghost town and there was no one left. And he said, Claude, you ask me what I think. I'll tell you this. If you could lick my heart, it would poison you. Yom HaShoah was this past week. And that is the recent history of our people. But it isn't the final history of our people. Because look at what you heard this morning about an Israeli born in Israel, who created a network to save lives all through the Jewish state. Now, it is not true, and don't let anyone ever tell you, that the Holocaust created the state of Israel, or that it was in some way necessary to create the state of Israel. The state of Israel was well on its way and would have done much better if there were 6 million more Jews in the world. Although, by the way, Father Dubois thinks it's more than that, because he thinks that the Jews who got killed in villages didn't count and would add almost 1 million to that total. But it is important to know that although Jews were killed, Judaism was not. And the Jewish people were not destroyed. And that's why this week we celebrate Yom HaAtzmaut. not because one led to the other, but one is the answer to the other. The response to destruction is rebuilding and renewal. And it is hard to imagine now how impossible it must have seemed that the Jewish people could ever rise again from the greatest catastrophe that ever befell a nation in the history of the world. From the only time that people planned the worldwide destruction of a people just because they existed. We're neighbors of people who had lived in the same land for hundreds of years. Watch them as they were marched out to the village. Men, women, children, to be shot or just to be tossed into mass graves. Who would believe that after that there was any redemption? Who would believe this? Who wouldn't assume that after the Jewish people endured that, they would say, we're done. We're finished. For hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years in Europe, we were faithful and we prayed and we studied and it ended in death. We're done. But we're not done. We're here. And even though it is true that anti-Semitism exists in the world and in some ways is resurgent in the world, still, when we think of where we were in the lifespan of people sitting in this room, not hundreds of years ago, it is extraordinary. It is miraculous. So when we say that you have to support the Jewish people, which means Judaism here and Eretz Israel, it's not only because of the future, it's also because of the past. It's also so that we don't, in the words of the poet, break faith with those who die. To you, as he wrote, from failing hands we throw the torch. That's why we're here. Because we remember what happened to us, and because we honor what we did with what happened to us. That we didn't give up. That we didn't abandon the heritage, that identification with that heritage was a death sentence for millions and millions of our people. I hope and I trust this week you will celebrate Yom HaAtzmaut, not only because there is so much to celebrate in what Israel is, but because there is so much to celebrate that there is in Israel. Sometimes we need great men to remind us of great truths. And this man, who goes from town to town and village to village, learns the names of Jews who died so that he can come and speak to Jews who live. He doesn't do it to give Judaism a decent burial. He does it to help Judaism find its new life. Not only is that why there's an Israel, that's why there's a synagogue. That's why there's a bat mitzvah. That's why there's a future. because although Jews died, our people lives. And on this day, when we are in the transition, the counting of the Omer, from death to life, from slavery to freedom, from the covenant of fate to the covenant of faith, we remember what happened, and we promise, yet again, never again. Shabbat Shalom.